Welcome to the Pin Down, your Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys.
And I'm Blake Silverman, writer for Detroit Bad Boys, covering everything from the Pistons to the NBA draft and the Motor City Cruise.
And guys, look, we got an awesome guest today, all right? So we're not going to keep him waiting around. We got Jack Kelly here, host of Pistons Intellect on YouTube, which if you're not already tuned into that, you should be. Go check it out. He's also the social media man for the NBL and, proud to say, friend of the show. Jack, welcome back to the Pin Down, man.
What's going on, team? I'm so excited to be back. I know this season has sucked, but I'm really excited to join yourselves and I think this is going to be a bit of a therapy session to at least start this show, but yeah, so excited to be back. So thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, and Jack, before we jump into Pistons stuff, I also have to thank you for joining when the NBL literally is in their finals and has a winner take all game this weekend. So you must be super busy right now. So can't thank you enough.
Oh man, I appreciate it. Yeah, we have a series championship deciding game five on Sunday in a couple of days, which it's been a long season. It's been our biggest season ever. So yeah, it's been a heap of fun.
Well, and I guess since we're right here on the topic, you've kind of had a front row seat to Alex Saar. You want to give a little pitch for him for all the Pistons fans that are already and understandably looking towards the draft?
Yeah, he's very intriguing. 7'1", athletic. Like, just from a Pistons standpoint, like, I think he's a five. So if the Pistons were to take him, like, I think he might be able to shoot it down the line, but I think defensively, he's a much better rim protector than Jalen Duren. But the issues with Alex are his rebounding and strength. But he can do some special things. Like, there's been multiple times he's like taking the ball coast to coast after a block shot finished. His jumper's like improving. But yeah, he's pretty exciting. If the Pistons take him number one, number two overall, I would be excited for sure.
All right. Well, let's talk about those Pistons real quick, because I believe the last time we had you on was actually the first week of the Pistons season, when there were obviously a lot of hopes, that were then dashed over the following months. So, you know, why don't we just open up the floor here, Jack? What have you been thinking about? What have you kind of taken away from this season, how it's gone and where things might be going?
Man, Wes, we spent the better part of 6 months talking each week about this team and how excited we were and how this was, for many fans, this was going to be the season where the Pistons climb the standings in some form. And, you know, we really start to get that belief that playoffs are back on the horizon. But I think for me, it just feels like at every point this team has failed and disappointed. Like, it just, any bit of positive, like a positive stretch has ultimately fizzled out and ended in just absolute disappointment. And it feels like it just gets worse and worse each time. Like, there's been some positives, don't get me wrong, but on the court, off the court, the stuff just continues to build. Like, Troy Weaver in the stands with that fan, like, oh man, like it, I don't even know where to start. Like, it's just like sad, like as a fan, like we all tune in every night. So many Pistons fans tune in. Like, the Pistons attendance is still like, I think it might be in the top half of the league. If not, it's in the middle.
Top 10.
Like, we are turning up. There is an appetite for Pistons basketball. And it just feels like we get, you know, kicked to the curb every time by this team. And like, it's just so tough. Like, and recently, like, without like the young guys playing, we get the news about Saar. Like, how scary is that? Like, it sounds like it's gonna be okay, but it's just like, man, can this? I can't believe I'm saying this in year four, but it's kind of year five of a rebuild. Like, can the season just be over? Like, that's the feeling. Like, can it just be over? Can we? Like, it's so sad. Like, I don't. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. Like, forget about trying to make content and talk about this team, like tuning in. Like, we all do this because we love it. And it's just like, how is this? Like, how are we that team? Like, how are the Pistons that team, the joke of the league? They've taken over the Kings now. Like, they're going to go on like 16 years, I think, now without a playoff win. What the hell? Like, what the hell? I don't know. Thank God they have Cade Cunningham. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
He has been the one bright spot for me. And I'm still high on some of these young guys, like Asar for sure. But like, man, like watching Cade come into his own and really establish himself as I don't think there's any question now that if this team can just win an appropriate amount of games, like he's an all-star. And like,
yeah,
I think a lot of people believe that heading into the season, but that's like, there's no question about that now. I don't think it's just a matter of, can this team actually win games, which is on Cade a little bit, but yeah, he's the one shining light.
Yeah, he definitely, I mean, he needs some help. Like, we're recording this the day after the Pistons lost to the Wolves. And I mean, Cade kind of kept them in that game for most of it. But at least for me watching it, I sort of knew where it was going. I feel like we've all seen the same story no matter how many times this season. But yeah, like one of the huge questions we had going into the season is Cade Cunningham the guy? And I feel like we know right now we can be, but aside from that, I feel like this season has been a lot of whatever can go wrong will go wrong. I felt that way during the losing streak, some of the ways that they were losing those games. And now, unfortunately, it's starting to feel a bit of the same, just how the season is ending too, which stinks.
Jack, I'm curious, after this, you know, after this whole season's kind of gone by, obviously all three of us were really high on Cade Cunningham, but there are three other players that kind of make up that core four that we all had identified going into the season. So from your perspective, what have you liked and disliked from each of, you know, Jaden Ivey, Asar Thompson, Jalen Duren, and how maybe they do or do not, up to you, fit next to Cade Cunningham here in the future?
I think the player I want to start with is Jalen Duren, because I feel like he's like, there's a lot of misconception around him amongst the fan base. Or I feel like, I think because he puts up some really impressive box numbers, box score numbers, and, you know, last night offensively, like he'll have stretches with Cade where they look so dynamic in like handoff actions and pick and roll. And like, you know, he's just like a physical beast. Like, I think it's tricky for the fan base to evaluate him. And I think like we spoke about it, Wes, throughout the whole off season, like the one area we really wanted to see Jalen Duren improve was defensively. And, you know, I think we like I was reasonable about like the expectations there. Like, I didn't expect him to be all defensive like caliber this season. Like, he's 20 years old, he's a young big man, but I think just to see at time his motor lack and just the defensive stuff to not really take any steps forward, if not, you could maybe say it's taken a marginal step back, that's been disappointing. But then he does stuff offensively well, like the footwork, the finishing. You'd like to see a bit more passing flashes, but yeah, I think like him and then kind of Jaden Ivey have been, the inconsistencies in their games has been very like frustrating this season for sure. And like ultimately, like I don't know what happens this summer, but you know, like Jaden Ivey's had stretches like around the All-Star break or just before the All-Star break, and when Kay's on the lineup where he's like dropping 30 points a night, shooting like 40% on threes, and you're just like, you can see so much potential there, but they just haven't been able to put it together. And I'm not sure how much that's to do with like, you know, Ivy and Monty, the Ivy and Monty stuff early in the season and kind of the supporting pieces around them. But those two have, for me, been really tough to evaluate this season. And then I think just Asar, like, I mean, I wasn't that high on him pre-draft, or at least from the standpoint of him coming to Detroit. Like, I think everyone was enamored by the athleticism and the potential there for sure. But maybe I have to take the L on that. Like, I still think the shot scares the living daylights out of me. I was there at Summer League and I don't think I saw Asar knock down two threes in a row in any warm-up. Like, it scares the hell out of me. But the defensive stuff, the transition play, the rebounding, some of the like the connective play, like there's so much there. And you see his brother Amen now, just like he's ascending with the Rockets, and it's hard to not see some of that in Assar, like how impactful that can be on the wing. So I think Assar, even though he's had up and down periods, like he for me has kind of jumped. It goes Cade, and then I think it's Assar for me right now. If you had to rank the four, and then Ivy and Durant, it's those two are like 3A and 3B for me. That's kind of my quick summary of them.
I think what you brought up with Durant is super interesting. Like, you know, he's not going to be an all defensive guy. Like, no one was expecting him to do that. And there are players in the NBA that you're okay with that. Like, you're okay with them lacking on defense because of what they bring on the other end of the floor. But in Durant's role, I feel like he needs to be like at least in a league average or some sort of net positive defender. And he's just not. Like, if there's someone in, I'm just going to say like a Jalen Green role, like you're okay with what he is on the defensive end of the floor because of how he pops on offense. But Durant is like, you're supposed to be your quarterback on defense and is like your big, your main rim protector. And he's just not. So I feel like you can't really give him as much leeway on the defensive end because of that, like what he's supposed to be.
Absolutely. And sorry, just to jump in, like I couldn't agree with you more, Blake. Like Jalen Durant, with the way this team is currently built and with the young pieces you have, like he needs to be good defensively. Like he has to be, because, you know, maybe one day a jump shot comes, but, you know, I don't even like him doing this, like shooting jumpers, because it's just like I think he's so effective around the rim and his offensive rebounding such an asset for this team. Like I don't want him out on the perimeter. So for him and this team to work, like he needs to be good defensively. And a lot of fans, like, and I understand it, they get frustrated with Stewart at the four, but part of the reason he continues to start at the four is because Jalen Durant can't protect the basket, can't provide, you know, good interior defense. So they have to have someone like Stu on the floor. And so many fans get frustrated with Stu. And I know at times on offense, it's clunky, it's hard to watch, but you know, he has the best on off rating on this team by a mile. And that's no coincidence. Like that he has to play alongside Jalen Durant right now, which is, it is a bit of a problem. So JD for sure needs to pick up on the defensive end. And the reason why I've compared him to Andre Drummond at times is because I feel like we saw this with Andre, where after like his first and second season, it became about trying to make Andre an offensive focal point, and it took away from his defense, and he became so focused on it. For Andre, it was like the post hook, which drove Pistons fans crazy. But like Andre would pout and his motor would lack even more when he didn't have it going offensively. And I feel like we've seen that creep into JD's game towards the end of the season, where like he's not getting calls, he's not getting back on defense. And that's where that Andre comparison comes from for me.
Yeah, well, just to add a little bit of stats to this, obviously these aren't perfect, right? This is just pure counting stats. But Jalen Durant, both seasons now, his rookie year and now this year, has averaged less than 2 stocks per game. That's steals and blocks combined. And he has 4 stocks, right? So steals and blocks combined, 4 in the past 5 games. So he's even still being on that pace. So not great, right? And I'm with you guys. That's definitely something he's got to improve. I wanted to go back to something you brought up earlier, Jack. You kind of quickly touched on the Jaden Ivey, Monty Williams thing that was going on for, you know, maybe the first quarter, first third of the season. And it feels like, you know, so much has happened since then that it's pretty far in the rear view mirror. But I'm curious what your thoughts were at the time when all of that was going down. And then, you know, now maybe in hindsight, if that combined with how Ivy's kind of struggled and sputtered here down the stretch has maybe changed how you view his fit on this team in general.
So at the time, I was super frustrated because it wasn't as much about Ivy coming off the bench that frustrated me, but it was more about you were starting Killian Hayes ahead of him, who, if you were starting a veteran who could stretch the floor and provide space for Cade, I can live with that. I wouldn't agree with it, but I can live with that. But you were starting a guy who's, we've spoken about Killian Hayes, like he's the worst shooter in the league, like just across the past few years. So that in itself was my biggest gripe with that, was like, you are, not only are you kind of messing with Jaden's confidence and development a little bit, but you are also putting a player ahead of him who, you know, we spoke about in the preseason, we didn't think was going to be in the rotation. So Monty clearly had something that he thought there was a player in Killian and he wanted to try and make it work and failed miserably, and Killian is now out of the league. That was my biggest issue with that. Now, looking at Jaden's season, now that we're 70-odd games in, I think it's been underwhelming for sure. I was very high on Jaden coming into the season. He actually kind of started the season quite well in terms of like his finishing at the rim improved dramatically. And the jumper took a while to come around. And then he got on that hot stretch kind of in mid-Jan to mid-Feb. But ultimately, the jumper has really, it feels like regressed this season. I'm not sure the percentage off the top of my head, but I know the three-point percentage has to be down from last season. And as a rookie, one of the things he really improved upon was his that kind of pull-up jumper and stuff out of the pick and roll. And that feels like that's just not a part of his game anymore, or he doesn't hit those shots at all anymore. So definitely, yeah, it's been a disappointing end to the season for sure for Jaden. And I don't think the lack of jumper and kind of his recent play has much to do with the Monty thing from the start of the season. But I think what's frustrating ultimately with the pairing of him and Cade is we still don't really know. Like, I think I saw Laz Jackson put out a poll this morning, like, do you think we know enough around that backcourt heading into the offseason? I still don't think you know. Like, I think Ivy's looked better without Cade on the floor. But then at times it's like, I guess that's what's so frustrating maybe about that Ivy coming off the bench thing to start the season, is we missed out there of like, you know, 25% of the season of seeing those two play a heap of minutes together. Now, maybe we get to 20 games into next season if Jaden and Cade on the roster and we just find out that it was never going to work. But I still feel like you can't say, it's hard for me at least to say like, no, that doesn't work, trade Jaden this summer. Like, it's just not going to work. But who knows? It feels like Monty, honestly, I don't think Jaden Ivey is a Monty Williams type of player. I think Monty's had a lot of his success with Chris Paul, and Cade fits the mold of a Chris Paul type of guard, at least as a playmaker. And it feels like that's the direction Monty wants to go, which is, you know, that's fine. But I think that's the thing. I just still don't know what we have with that backcourt.
Yeah, and just to add some numbers too regarding Ivy's shot. Year one, his shooting splits were 42, 34, 75. That 34% three-point percentage was on 4.7 attempts per game. This year, he's at 43, 33, 76 on 4.6 three-point attempts per game. So from it's all like essentially the same. Like, he hasn't made a leap, and that's kind of concerning considering that super hot stretch he went on. Like, that's not filtering that out or anything like that. So yeah, he hasn't really taken a leap. He hasn't really regressed either, but I would say that's more concerning because he's not being asked to do as much this season when he's playing next to Cade, who's the primary initiator. You want to run things through him. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like he needed to take a leap in that sense, specifically with shooting. And like you said, Jack, we don't know really at this point if this backcourt pairing is going to work together. I think what we know is the full group, like the idea, doesn't work together. Like maybe Cade and Ivy does work, but their surrounding cast has to change. Like something needs to change. I feel like we don't know what it is. I think the only thing I can say for sure is we need more shooting in this starting lineup, at least.
Yeah, for sure. So before we get into some questions here, Jack, I think you mentioned that you had a question that you wanted to bring up. So we'll give you the honors of the first question of the show. Go ahead. What do you got?
So for each of you two, I would like you to, I've got to rank these three things in order of where would you like to see the most change this summer? So one is the front office, two, coaching staff, three, the roster. What do you think needs the most change this summer in order to, for the Pistons to start trending in the right direction next season? So I can give you mine just quickly. I'm not going to explain it. I spoke about it on my episode last night. I had the front office number one. I just think we need fresh eyes in there no matter what to review this roster. Number two for me was the roster. That needs to be changed up. And number three was the coaching staff. I just want to say, I think the coaching staff have done a poor job. Monty done a lot of questionable things, but I think you can't just consistently clean house in the coaching staff. So that was my three, the way I ranked them.
Yeah, I'm sort of with you, Jack. I'll flip-flop it a little bit. I'm going to go number one, roster. Number two, front office. Number three, coaching staff. I just think we know this roster has holes, but I'm sort of putting those two neck and neck because this front office put this roster together. It is crazy when you just go back and look at what this is year four for Troy Weaver, and you add up the wins, and the past two seasons have been historically like just horrible, like the worst seasons in franchise history. So I'm just not confident that there's going to be any front office move. Maybe there is with like the assistant GMs, or they bring in new scouts to focus on, whether it's through the draft or free agency or whatever it is. I'm just not super confident. I feel like the one thing I can be confident in is that we're going to see roster changes. I don't know if they're going to move on from a Jaden Ivey or a Jalen Duren. I'm with you on the coaching staff as well. I just think first year coach, no matter how many things we've disagreed with or have came up throughout the season, I think there's always going to be bumpy roads with a first year coach, a new staff, and players getting used to it. Should they be this bumpy? Definitely not. But in terms of what needs to change immediately, I think it's the roster and the front office for sure, kind of hand in hand.
So I think for me, the roster's number two, but only because the leadership that kind of molds that roster is, like you said, Blake, it's at fault. So the question then is whether you think it's more likely that there's a front office change or a coaching change for whichever I'm going to list one or three. I mean, I would say moving on from Monty Williams seems unlikely. And just truthfully, the only path really forward for this team and this roster is if you get a lot of guys on the team, on the roster, that fit whatever the coach, whoever that is, wants to do. So if that coach is going to be Monty Williams, then you either need Troy Weaver to really change his approach, which I would take that. You know, that's fine. If he's going to stick around, he changes it to basically just, I'm going to give Monty the guys that he wants, right, to fill the roles that he thinks he needs. Or if he's not going to do that, then I guess you'd need to move on with the front office first. But those things are only prioritized because they need to get aligned before any real roster change is going to happen, right? So I think I'd probably lean to what you said, Jack, which would be front office, roster, and then coaching.
Yeah. I just think you need, no matter like even if you just try and separate yourself from your frustration with Troy, like as a fan, like I just think this roster just needs a fresh set of eyes. Like it feels like there's an attachment to this young core. Like when you draft these guys, like as even as a fan, like this is why I struggle. Like when I talk to people outside of the Pistons fans, they're like, they don't really see, you know, they just look at things differently to how we do, like obviously. So yeah, I think just a fresh set of eyes would do wonders.
Yeah, I think it's also just, we've sort of mentioned this, just looking at, like, it seems like Troy, I don't know who it is, but people are definitely looking at things through a lens in terms of definitely drafting, as well as potentially some of the moves and like signings that were made, because we know we have good pieces, or at least talented pieces, but they obviously just don't fit together, or at least aren't working together.
All right, guys, let's dive into some of the fan submitted questions here. So this one is from Twitter. This is at Base Pistons. Said that this pod predicted before the season, which, Jack, that was you and I. We did this. So, this pod predicted before the season that Jaden Ivey could be the team's leading scorer, or at least the second leading scorer behind Cade Cunningham. Has Jaden Ivey been a disappointment? And we've obviously talked a little bit about it. We've touched on this earlier, but you know, maybe just in terms of the scoring specifically, Jack, what about Jaden Ivey's maybe approach or just performance this season, putting the ball in the basket, has been disappointing?
I think it's the shooting. Like, it's the easiest answer, but it's just his inability to hit even just wide open threes. If he cannot hit those shots, he cannot play with Cade. Like, regardless of how I feel about his athleticism and potential and whatever, like, if he can't hit open threes and catch and shoot threes at a decent clip, like, you just can't play him alongside Cade, especially if Jaden's never going to be kind of like a lockdown defender, which I don't think he will be. I don't think that's a huge statement. So, the shooting for sure. Like, and then I sort of touched on it, but like, last season, he developed a really like reliable mid-range jumper off the pull-up, which seems to have disappeared, unfortunately. And then, I think it's just all facets of shooting for him. And then it feels like as well, the way the NBA is officiating since the All-Star break, like doesn't feel like he's getting to the line as much. You know, obviously that's a league-wide thing, but that was also one of his kind of major strengths, I felt like. So, it's a shooting for sure. I don't know how you can go past that.
Yeah, and maybe it was in year one, I feel like there was more of a carefree element too. Like, Cade, it didn't miss the whole season, but the great majority of it, like, you kind of knew that year was about development and just making things happen, hopefully winning some games along the way, like building something before Cade was back this year. And I feel like this season things definitely got real. And then when the losing streak happened, who knows what happens mentally after that. So maybe there is just a bit of, I don't know, like, they're definitely not playing like carefree basketball or anything like that. Like, it seems like things are hitting home more when things go wrong than we definitely noticed last year. So that's an element of it too, but especially like shooting when you get in your own head too. And I'm not saying I know this is happening in this case, but very well could be, things are hard to get back from too.
Yeah, definitely. So let's dive into this next one here. This is from our guy Bryce. Simon, again, thanks for tuning in, man. Appreciate you. And everyone, if you're not listening to the Pistons Pulse, please do. I produce that one. Great show. We have a lot of fun. So he says, what would be the one improvement that would make the biggest impact in the young core four? So those being Cade, Ivy, Asar, and Duren working out. And he says that you can't do a trade. So they have to improve in something, or you have to like augment the roster around them. So what would be the one thing that you do?
How realistic, Jack, does it have to be? For me, it would be Asar learning to shoot. Like, he would instantly, he might even be, if Asar could shoot from three and all of a sudden just had like a decent league average jumper. Like, I feel like he could potentially be better than Cade one day. Like, I know that's crazy, but like, yeah. But if I'm being, I want to be a little bit realistic. Like, for me, maybe it's Jalen Duren's defense. Like, imagine if he got to league average or above league average next season. You would still have some fit issues with him and Asar. But I feel like you could really lean into the Pistons being more of a defensive-minded team. Or maybe Ivy's shooting. You know, I'm just going to say Duren, if he could become above league average defensively, that would be huge.
Yeah, Jack, my head was in the same spot as yours. I was like, I mean, it's not realistic, but Asar and even Duren, like, developing a shot. Like, we saw it. You saw it up close. Like, Jalen Duren working on that, like, mid-range, even three-pointer in summer league. Like, if that magically became a part of his game, I think it could unlock so many things for this team. Just, that's never going to be Jalen Duren. I think they need a floor spacing five. But yeah, if we're wishing for things, that would be one too.
I really think it's just Jalen Duren's defense. Like, I almost don't care too much about the spacing problems. Like, they've been huge, they've been massive, but this team has so many poor perimeter defenders that everything is getting funneled down to Jalen Duren. And he is just invisible as a rim protector. He's not there. Even against the other night against the Timberwolves, there were at least two times where he was noticeably late to me. And, like, you know, for you guys, for the listeners, I am not very good at watching help side rotation defenders and analyzing that, especially live. So for me to have caught how bad and how late it was is actually pretty incredible. It was incredibly late how bad that rotation, those two rotations were for Jalen Duren. So, like, if he could just be a good rim protector, you know, the offense still has major problems, but now you're stopping the other team from scoring at the rim at the rate that they do. That would be absolutely game-changing, wouldn't it?
Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, and we, like, another issue with him on defense is we've seen him overcommit, like jump a little bit earlier than he should. At whatever you need to work on to clean that up, I think, is another thing too. But yeah, the holes are noticeable for sure. And I'm in the same boat as you, Wes. Like, if I'm noticing something, I'm just like, yeah, it's something's got to change.
So strange. Like, his timing, it just feels like he's constantly late. And, like, maybe, you know, maybe learning defense at the five in the NBA, that might be one of the toughest things to learn as a young big man. So I think the hope we have is that it comes around. But at the same time, sometimes I hate that I might be saying, like, I'm so negative on Jalen Duren, but, like, I think sometimes it's a real cop-out to just say, oh, he's 20 years old. Because it's like, okay, like, well, how old's Jaden Ivey? Like, 22, maybe, just Cade's? Like, I don't know. Maybe it just takes longer, but sometimes it's just like, I really have struggled to see, like, many games this season where he's actually, you felt him defensively, his presence. Maybe he did in those first couple of games of the season, but, like, yeah, it feels like his best games this season, even when he had, like, this huge 20-25 assists, like, his defense was still not great in that game. So, like, it's tough to evaluate.
And I'll just say quickly before we get on to the next question here that, you know, Blake, you and I have talked about it earlier this season, but, you know, Jack, you mentioned how frequently he's late, right? It's kind of a processing issue, and it pops up on the offensive end too, where he makes these passes that, you know, he really shouldn't. He had one against the Timberwolves where Cade made a back cut and he threw it for Lord knows why. The pass was not there. And so he does these things on both sides of the ball. And for me, you know, I'm starting to get of the mind that guys just don't materially improve as processors. Doesn't matter how young they are. It's kind of a feel thing. And, you know, on the opposite end of this, most of us don't look in the draft, see a guard who really struggles to process the game and say, give that kid 5 years. He's going to be a great playmaker one day. You know, so I'm kind of now taking the same stance on defense. I hate to say it's never going to happen, but I'm doubtful of it, and I don't love that. But let's go to this next one here from Coffee in the DPB comments. He says, how do you explain that the Pistons won more games basically without Cade and with, he says, a worse roster than last year than with more Cade and potentially a better roster this year? So basically, why were they better last year than this year?
that's a really good question. I think one of the things that's working against the Pistons here is just the Pistons and the Wizards, like, ultimately just how much talent is in the league. Like, I know this is a bit of a cop-out, but I feel like the league as a whole has gotten so much better that if you're one of those bottom 3 to 5 teams, there is no easy nights. Like, and the Pistons, like, this season, it's a good question for sure. Like, I don't know why. I think it's a combination of coaching, poor roster, timing of injuries. Like, as disappointing as this final stretch has been, like, it has been so disappointing. But the Pistons do have a ton of players out at the moment. Obviously, they got Cade and Durant back. But, like, they have been fielding, like, a Motor City Cruise lineup. Like, and they had obviously injuries last season, but I think the amount of, like, how many players? I think they've played 30 players this season. Like, there has been so much turnover, rarely any chance to build any chemistry. I'm not sure how many players they played last season, but I feel like maybe there's a little bit more consistency with the starting group, at least once Cade, because Cade only played, 12 games. So, like, you knew he was gone. So Jaden Ivey got the whole season to play point guard, well, alongside Killian. Bojan played a fair portion of the season. Durant played a fair portion of the season. Like, maybe there's just a little bit more, like, stability with the lineup, as silly as that sounds. But, yeah, it's a great question from Koff.
Yeah, I also think, I mean, we don't want to use the injury excuse either, but the guy's missing time to start this season, and specifically Bojan, like, he was the Pistons' leading scorer last year, like, averaged more than 20 points a game, and he, like, I don't think Bojan was the answer to this, the Pistons being better last year compared to this year by any means, but he seemed to be that guy who could just go and get a bucket when you need one. And other than Cade, like, you don't really have that this year. And when another team is out on a run or you're in an offensive lull, like, that could get prolonged really easily if you don't have someone like that. I mean, you brought in Fontecchio, who's out now, Quentin Grimes, who we haven't seen much of. Like, maybe those guys could be dudes who can come in and make shots when the other team's on a run, but I feel like you don't have much of that, and you're still throwing a roster out there that doesn't have many guys who can shoot. First year coach, and again, it's just everything that could go wrong, like, has went wrong. Like, there might not be a specific answer to this, just the basketball gods working against them.
All right, so this is interesting. We got a pretty good follow-up question here. This is from at John Pete Schwartz on Twitter, but focusing in specifically on Cade, noting again that the team's win percentage is technically better when Cade is out than when he's played with the team. And he wants to know, is it possible that this vision of Cade being this primary initiator is maybe just flawed and that's not what he's going to be? What do you think, Jack?
So I think Cade, I think we've kind of figured out this season, like, I don't think you want him in that Luka Doncic role, heliocentric role. I think you want him, like, primary initiator for sure. I think he can do that. But I think he's just still a bit too turnover prone. I know they've gone down since, like, I think to start the season, it was really rough in the first 2 months. But I was actually going to look up the numbers of, like, how Ivy's played with Cade out of the team and how Cade's played Ivy out of the team. But, like, I just think this season, even if, like, I don't think the team's like winning percentage is significantly better without Cade. Like, I think maybe, yeah, I don't know. I just think this season has been such a disaster to say that the team won two more games without Cade as opposed to with him, like with all the variables we've discussed, lineup changeover, injuries, just no, this team not knowing how to close any games. Like, I just think there's too many variables to base, like, to take anything major away from how this team's performed without Cade as opposed to with him. Like, as I said to open it, like, we've seen some of these offensive tears Cade's gone on this season. Like, he's had genuine, like, 10-game, 15-game stretches where he's averaging, like, 28 points a game on decent efficiency. Like, I didn't really envision that for him this season. Like, I'll put my hand up and say that. Like, I wasn't sure he's a guy who could score, you know, go out and get you 30 consistently on any given night. And I feel like he's kind of proving he can do that. Sure, it's got to lead to winning basketball. But, yeah, I just think he's the guy. So that's where I'll end that one.
I totally agree with you for what it's worth. I think you just need, like, the roster needs to be complementary around him, and it's not that at all right now. I just don't think there's, like, K's not the issue. I get why people can say that he's the guy and the team is, like, losing this many games. So, like, I understand the question, but the team was the worst team in the league last year. They're going to be the worst team in the league this year, unless they get into a chase with the Wizards. But yeah, I don't think you can look too much into it just because they've got less wins with Cade. It's a roster issue. It's like, they're not built for the teams that they're not built to compete with the teams that are successful in this league right now. And Cade isn't the problem. Cade isn't the reason for that.
I want to dive a little bit deeper into, like, the Luka Doncic role thing that you brought up there, Jack, because that was the first thing I thought of as well, right? Like, being the primary scorer. And honestly, I kind of think this is, you know, Cade Cunningham wants to be that type of guy. The biggest hesitation I have is actually his scoring efficiency. And I know it's really improved as the season's gone on, but, you know, he does still struggle at times to get to the free throw line. He, if you really start throwing extra defenders at him, he struggles to get to the rim, finish in traffic, all these sorts of things. And yes, it's very true that if he gets a very consistently good pull-up three-point shot, a lot of those issues kind of get mitigated. But, you know, you mentioned the turnovers. Is there anything else that kind of gives you hesitation on projecting him into that Luka Doncic role? And I also just want to bring this up because Luka's insane. I was talking to someone last night and I said, you know, maybe Cade Cunningham one day could be about 75% of Luka Doncic. So I went just for fun. I did the math. 75% of Luka Doncic's stat line this season. It was 25 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. That's insane.
It's, yeah, Luka, like, is just on another level. Like, that guy has been special since, like, his first game in the league. But in terms of what Cade needs to improve upon, or where do I have hesitations with him getting to that primary option on, like, a genuine playoff team, like, I think he kind of nailed it, Wes. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be a high free throw sort of guy. I think it's just due to the lack of explosion he has. Like, he's put on more size. Like, I actually saw, I was looking obviously at some highlights of him last night. And then I saw a photo of him from his rookie season. Like, he has put on so much muscle. Like, he is so much bigger, like, through the shoulders, arms, everything. And, like, he's gotten to the line a bit more. But I think just his overall lack of explosion, like, I think it might have been Laz Jackson once again who made this good point when I think he came on the Pistons Pulse the other week. He said because Cade doesn't get that kind of explosion off the ground and get up into the air as much, when he gets, like, hit with contact, he doesn't flail as much. So it doesn't look like like his legs aren't flying everywhere. Like, because when you're more airborne, you're more prone to, like, you know, your body flailing everywhere because you're airborne. So when you get hit, the contact looks harder than it would if you're much lower to the ground and more in control. And I feel like that's a real thing. Like, that was an excellent point from Lats. And so I think, yeah, not being able to kind of score a ton at the line, and maybe his finishing at the basket's gotten better, like compared to when he was a rookie. Like, I remember it used to feel like he missed so many, like, even easier kind of shots around the rim. So I feel like he's definitely improved. But yeah, those are probably my hesitations. Because I feel like when you watch Luka, like, he doesn't have the explosion, but he's finishing, like, his ability to use, like kind of post up smaller guys and just kind of pivot, use fakes, use the glass. Like, he's, you know, he's got that step back three and the passing and everything, but, like, his ability to finish in the floater area around the paint is incredible. And that's where I think Cade lacks.
With Cade getting to the line too, and this is totally dumb, just don't even listen to it, but does he need to be more vocal, like, getting to the rim? Like, he got against the Timberwolves on Wednesday night, he got to the line 8 times, and I heard him on the broadcast doing the classic, like, a ref thing. Like, do we need to hear that more? Because I hear it from Ant-Man, like, that, you never know. I don't know, just a thought.
I think I think that's a thing, like, for sure. And I do think once the Pistons actually win some games, like, I also believe in that theory of, like, star calls. Like, Cade's not a star at the moment. Like, we know he can be really good, but, you know, the NBA world media, like, no one talks about Cade. Like, he doesn't get any shine, any attention. So, like, I feel like once the Pistons are actually kind of relevant, he will get those kind of favorable calls once he's an all-star. But I still don't see it being a huge part of his game.
Yeah. All right, so this next one here, this is from Big Cheese. It says, what percent chance would you give Asar Thompson being a starter next season? Jack, what do you think?
Okay, so obviously the tough thing is here, we don't know what the roster will be like, but I think I'll just say 80%.
Yeah, I was going to say like 75, so I'm pretty close to you. Like, we don't know who they're going to bring in the summer, through the draft, what it's going to be like. I mean, I think when they acquired Fontecchio at the deadline, I assumed that he might be plugged into the starting lineup. But we've seen that when they're both available, like, Asar's the guy. And I think that's the right decision because his ceiling is much higher and everything he brings defensively. You want the shot to get better, of course. It depends, like, who is going to be in the starting lineup, because if Asar is out there, he's already a guy who's not going to shoot the ball at a high rate. So yeah, I'm with you. I think it's more likely than not he's in the starting lineup, but hopefully we can surround him with some shooters.
Guys, I'm shocked. I was sitting here, I'm reading this question as I'm reading it out, I'm sitting and I'm going, oh, like 95. Like, I'm pretty dang sure that Asar Thompson is going to be starting, just for the wing, you know, the perimeter defense alone on forwards that he can offer on a forward driven, you know, NBA league. Right. So, you know, Jack, then Blake, I'm curious, what is the little bit of hesitation there for you guys? Do you think? Like, it seems to me that they're really prioritizing Asar Thompson.
Part of me is just scared that if, like, I'm factoring, like, the worst case scenario where, like, they're saying everything's brought back and maybe the Pistons sign, like, Tobias Harris, and then you've got Fontecchio and Tobias Harris as your starting 3-4, which maybe that's not the worst thing in terms of winning games day one next season, but it's like, I could see if the Pistons throw a huge bag at Tobias, they re-sign Fontecchio for like 80 million a season. Like, I could see a world where it's like, where Asar is kind of still playing heaps of minutes off the bench, but you're starting your veterans. That's the thinking for me. But right. Like, I'm with you, Wes. Like, the positional value of Assar and like the defense he brings there is like he's a starter day one. He should be. But you never know.
Right. For me, it's like the unknown of the roster. And if it looks somewhat the same, we don't part with any of the young players and you have Jaden Ivey in your starting lineup, Duren's still a starter. Like, I feel like something has to give. It's probably not with Assar. You're right, Wes. But I just think there's a world where he maybe starts off the bench. Like, I think he's definitely a long-term piece. But just because of the unknown of what this team is going to look like, maybe it looks somewhat the same with some additions. I hope that's not the case. But it's just the fact that Assar, his archetype, like if he shot 35% from three, how much money would that guy make in this league? Like, it, type of dudes like that get paid. So he's definitely a piece for the future, but I just lean back at the shooting, which puts a sliver of doubt in my mind.
Okay, we're going to move on, but I'm going to let off this one little hot take and then we're going to ignore it. I think there are exactly two guarantees to not only be on the roster next season, but also starting, and that's Cade Cunningham and Assar Thompson. Everything else is up in the air for me. But we got a fun question. I'm going to narrow it to take out this most recent draft just for the sake of time. This is from Bryce again. He says, this one might be tough to do live. We're going to do it. Seeing how things have looked now, who would you select that was taken after them in the spots that Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren were selected? Just for that draft, we'll ignore this past year for just the sake of time. I do have an answer. So if you guys want, just give me a nod here and I'll give mine first while you all look it up. Okay, so for me, Jaden Ivey, I think, is a really easy one. Because Jalen Williams goes at 12, and that would be just a really, really perfect fit here with this roster next to Cade. Can shoot, can score, wing defender. I think that one's pretty self-explanatory. But Duren, he went 13, and honestly, I'm torn between Ochai Agbaji, who I do still like. He hasn't really popped off much, but I like the potential he's got there, and Walker Kessler, who went about 10 picks later, because just the simple fact that we've been talking multiple times this show that if Jalen Duren could just block some shots, just be a rim protector, right? Everything opens up, at least defensively for this team. Well, Walker Kessler can block some shots, and he blocked some shots day one. He's still blocking shots right now. So those would be my two. I would have the haul of J-Dub and Walker Kessler probably. Yeah, I'll go Walker Kessler over Agbaji just to make it interesting. But anyone else, whatever you're prepped, you guys go ahead. Go.
Yeah, I think, Wes, it's hard to disagree. You can't go past J-Dub. Like, that's – like I somehow, like when you were reading the question out, I forgot about him being in this draft. So I was thinking the player immediately taken after.
Like he might go number one.
Yeah, like he's a top.
He's in that conversation.
Three. Like, yeah. So I can't even dispute that for Ivy. I think though, like looking at the Jalen Duren one, like Walker Kessler was the first name that I saw. No one else has really jumped out too much, though, to be honest. Like, maybe Duren was still the pick there. Like, to be honest. Like, even though for the flaws he has and we've discussed, like, at pick 13, like, that still seems like really good value. The only other name I would throw in there is maybe Tari Eason. But I'm still not sure. Like he's had some really awesome moments for the Rockets. He's, a rebounder, hustle guy, like, crazy athlete. But considering like the things I've said about Jalen during this episode, like I still think maybe that was the right pick at 13.
Yeah, I'm with you both. I mean, J-Dub is the slam dunk one for this one. I think maybe what about Shaedon Sharpe for Ivy? Like he's missed a lot of time this year, but he's shown some flashes and with his shooting, he's shown that he can be a great and really exciting player. And I think that was one that when the Ivy pick was going, like, it was kind of like, should the Pistons do it? But you didn't really know much from him because he didn't play at Kentucky. I agree that Duren is probably still a pick, but I'm just going to throw out a few names for the sake of doing it. The one that jumped out to me immediately was Ayton Watson. I mean, I think he fell into a perfect role in Denver. It would probably be different if he was in Detroit and asked to do much more. But with his frame, like that wingy, like rim protector, not a great shooter, but maybe he improves. I think that's one. The other one that initially jumped out to me was, and I hope my Michigan State friends aren't listening to this because this dude drove us crazy, is Max Christie, another one falling into the right situation, but he fills some like needs that the Pistons have. The only other one to me that you could say on top of the names we've already brought up is Nikola Jovic in Miami, who's having a good year and shooting the ball well also.
All right, Jack, I know we're low on time, so I want to squeeze just one more in. Want to end on, I mean, kind of a high note, I guess. Just for you, from your perspective, this is from 313 Pistons in the DBB comments, by the way, but wants to know, what would be the best case scenario for you coming in and like, or sorry, coming out of the offseason, right? So draft, free agency, trades, like what is the ideal path to fixing this roster and being competitive next year?
How would a core of three players heading to next season sound of Cade Cunningham, Asar Thompson, and Mikal Bridges? like, I don't know if that's even possible. I've been wanting to do some research, try and figure out how the Pistons could get a guy like that. You reunite him with Monty. I don't know what you have to give up to get him, I assume. Like, can
Ivy and Duren, yeah, plus stuff?
Can the Pistons, you do so it? With this protected pick that they owe the Knicks, can the Pistons still trade this season's draft pick? They just can't trade futures. Is that correct?
After the pick's been made, yeah, they can trade this year.
So they would have to select, say the Pistons get pick three, select that player, and then they could trade. Like, I feel like you're going to have to give up a lot, yeah, to get Mikal Bridges, but with where the Nets are, I could see them going, all right, this is a way to reset. We get, in my mind, I think it would have to be whoever the Pistons draft this season, because they would draft on behalf of the Nets, I would assume. And then you give up, yeah, definitely one of Duren or Ivy, if not. Maybe it's got to be both. Maybe that's too much. But, like, for me, like, you have to go get a guy who can, like, Mikal Bridges, I feel like, would be perfect for this team. I know if he becomes available, like, there's going to be offers. Like, all those teams with future picks, they can throw a ton at the Nets, and that would be appealing to the Nets because they have no picks. But if they could somehow get a 20, like, a genuine scorer who can defend, who's actually played in big, meaningful games, has been in a winning culture, like, because this team has no culture. There's no, like, I know Monty was meant to be that guy, but I kind of think there's only so much a coach can do. Like, this team is, like, whether we want to admit it or not, like, these young guys are, like, they have been in such a poor environment in terms of, like, so many losses. Like, they cannot close games. They just don't know how to win games, obviously. So I think, like, best case scenario for me would be, like, yeah, if you get a guy like Mikal Bridges, like, and I'm, like, I know a lot's been spoken about this draft in terms of how poor it is in terms of star talent. I feel like there's always a guy in the draft, but for me, like, I'm so open to moving anyone not named Cade and pretty much Asar if you can bring back a genuine starting five next season that's, like, you can actually see winning games. Because I think last offseason, this team, and I actually thought I was okay with the plan. Like, but it was largely that the core four, they're going to improve together, and we just support them with some old shooters, and, you know, this team will progress. Well, the young guys we've seen, you're not going to win games if you just bring back those four next summer, our next season. So go get a guy like Mikal Bridges, or go find someone who's won games, fringe all-star type talent. That's the best case for me. And you pair him with Cade.
All right. Jack, thank you so much for jumping on. This was great. Had a lot of fun. Why don't you just make sure everyone knows where they can find all your stuff? Because we know you're busy as heck. So lay it all out. Where can the people find you, man?
No, thanks so much, first of all, for having me back on, guys. I wanted to jump on more frequently throughout the season, but honestly, this NBL stuff, it's been crazy. But hopefully I can jump back on more during the off season once it all quiets down. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Jack_Kelly_3on3. And then I have Pistons Intellect on YouTube, as well as on Instagram. You can find us there as well. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Thank you so much, Jack, especially for joining us in the midst of the NBL Finals. I'm excited for that one. I'm going to try to tune in or rewatch it when I can. And special thank you to Sean Corp, our managing editor over at Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. Shout out to you guys for the great questions and talking points tonight. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us here on YouTube or Twitter. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you all.